You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Change is life's only constant. Sometimes these changes strike without warning. If you or a loved one has experienced a sudden health change and are in need of nursing home care, how do you finance it? What's your best option? How do you navigate the Medicaid maze? And what type of pre-planning should you do? To shed a little light on Medicaid crisis planning is our guest, elder law attorney Aaron Solomon from the SSR Law Office. Welcome to Baby Boomer University. I'm your host, Rich Sparks, senior real estate specialist, and class is in session. All right. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for coming out and joining us on our first sunny day.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
No worries. Well, obviously, we're going to be talking a lot today about Medicare and Medicaid and all that good stuff. But I want to start off on Basics 101. What is the difference between Medicaid and Medicare?
Absolutely. We get that question all the time. So Medicare is it's an insurance that you get because of your age. Okay. If you're over 65, you have Medicare. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that is something that's going to pay for hospital stays, doctor's visits, that type of thing. Now, most of the time, people have a supplemental coverage on top of that to pay for. Medicare pays for the first 80%, and then supplemental would pay for the additional 20%. So that's okay. Medicare. Now, Medicaid is, we always remember, it's aid, okay? So that's one way that you can remember that. So Medicaid is something that my clients look into when they there is health insurance Medicaid for people who can't afford private insurance. But the Medicaid that we help people with is nursing home Medicaid. So that is how do we pay for the nursing home costs? Medicare does pay for some of that, but it's only short term after like some type of an event where they may need rehab.
Okay.
Okay. So that's what their Medicare is going to be limited to. A lot of people come in and say, well, isn't Medicare going to pay this large nursing home bill every month? The answer is no. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then we try to figure out how are we going to qualify for Medicaid?
Okay. And, you know, actually, I just read a statistic. No, you just want to be closer to the mic.
Okay. That's it.
No worries. So according to the American Association for Long-Term Care Insurance, the annual cost of long-term care, they're expecting it to double in the next 20 years. Currently, it's around $73,000, and they're expecting it to go up to $131,800. And I know we've had clients that was in that situation also. So we're going to cover a lot of things to help people get prepared. But one thing I want to start off with right off the bat as I throw my phone on the ground because it keeps ringing here. Let's see. So you guys have – you're an actual elder law attorney, which I cannot stress enough how important that is. We had someone that reached out to us. They spoke with an attorney. I have no idea who it was that had them transfer their dad's property into the daughter with a quitclaim deed. He was planning on aging into place. It uncapped the taxes. He had been there for 30 years. Taxes went up close to $6,000 a year. And now he can no longer afford to be there.
Yes, yes.
So I cannot stress enough going to someone that is actually an elder law attorney. Other people might have best intentions, but you have great knowledge and you have a 5-star rating. Did you know that?
I do, yes. Thank you very much.
So let's read one of these reviews, and then we're going to go into some of the things on how to get prepared for Medicare, talk about Lady Bird deeds and all that fun stuff.
Absolutely.
So the attorneys at SSR Law have been a great resource to my friends, family, and clients for many years. I continue to refer anyone I know who has an estate planning issue to them, as I know their knowledge of elder law, probate, and estate plan is unsurpassed. Now, this was a review from another attorney.
Oh, very nice.
See?
Yeah.
And he was, I believe, a bankruptcy attorney, which I've got to admire. If that's your niche, stay in your niche. And he's sending his clients to you. So you guys, and I've sent clients to you. You guys do a fantastic job. But right off the bat, does the Medicaid laws differ from state to state?
They do. They do. Not a whole lot, but they do a little bit. So we're only licensed in Michigan, so we can't help people that are actually out of state. However, we would refer to someone in their area.
Okay. Now, what if you have the situation where you have one spouse in state and one spouse out of state? Because we've ran into that before. How does that?
So it would be the spouse, whichever state the spouse who is in the nursing home. Okay. Those are the rules that would apply.
Okay. I see. All right. And how can we prevent, let's just get to the chase here. How can someone prevent losing every asset by going into long-term care?
Yeah. So when in our office, when a client comes in, we try to assess, are they in what's called crisis mode, meaning we need a nursing home right now.
Right.
Or are they in a position to pre-plan is what we call it. I'm sure heard of this 5-year look back that's out there, right? So that we have to do things 5 years prior to going into a nursing home. So doing that, there's different plans that we do in our office. We could do an irrevocable trust where they move money into it. They give up control. So they have to have a trusted person that they can pick as the trustee, typically a child or family friend, a niece, nephew, that would be the trustee and watch over the funds for them. So that's one way we do it. Another way that we do it is we take their traditional estate plan, a joint revocable trust between a married couple, and we split it up into two. So we do a trust for the dad and a trust for the mom.
Okay.
And what that does is it allows if one of them were to pass away, we move the assets into that person's trust. And then when they pass, there's no assets in the surviving spouse's name. So if they were to then need nursing home care, it's all protected.
Oh, excellent.
So that's another way that we pre-plan. That is a great plan for a lot of different people. As far as a crisis plan, though, let's say we need Medicaid right now. So our first thing that we always do is ask, do they have a disabled child? So in Medicaid looks at a disabled child if they're receiving Social Security disability. They don't have to be disabled from birth. It could be a child who worked for many years and now is no longer able to work and on disability.
Sure. And that could be legally blind even, couldn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So if we can show that one of the children are disabled, we can move assets to that person without that 5-year look back or penalty. So they can automatically then become qualified for Medicaid in a nursing home. And that's a really great plan. Otherwise, it depends on if it's a married couple or a single person, right? There's different rules. So if it's a single person, the rules are a little bit more difficult, but we can typically save half of it.
Okay.
Through different plans that we can implement. You know, there are some people like to do a spend down where they go purchase a car or a house or, you know, fix up a house. I've had people do. It's really fact specific as to what that plan might be.
Right.
You know, so we would work with them on that. Now, with a married couple, there's a lot of different options for them because there's the Spousal Impoverishment Act out there that says we don't want to bankrupt the at-home spouse.
Right.
Based on the cost of care that you were just talking about, you know, even people with a sizable estate could go through everything.
Like that.
Right?
In a heartbeat.
Yeah. So there are some more options we have out there for the spouse to protect them so that they don't lose their assets.
Now, and that's part of it, too, is that pre-planning.
Yes.
I mean, coming in before the 5-year look back. And we do have some questions that people have asked that we've put out on Facebook. And I'll throw one out here real quick. Can small cash gifts given by an elder to family members disqualify them from Medicaid?
Yes.
No matter how small?
There is not a dollar amount. It's It is any gift out of their account or out of, that they give for less than fair market value. So it could be Christmas gifts, birthday gifts, church donations.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so it really does add up. Now, that being said, we don't go through a year's worth of bank statements and find right. every $20 donation that they did, mm-hmm. right? But yeah, you got to be really careful when making gifts, for
but,
sure.
But something as simple as that just kind of shows you where waiting to that last minute to plan can really turn around and bite you in the asset.
Absolutely.
You know, right? and I think that's the biggest part of this. So let's say worst case scenario, someone didn't have a plan. They're last minute, they get in a car wreck or whatever, because it's not just a matter of aging. It can be anything.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And how bad can Medicaid attach to their assets? What's the worst case scenario?
So, well, you know, worst case scenario, it's never that Medicaid is actually taking the assets. It's that they're paying privately for the nursing home, mm-hmm. right? And you know, the worst cases that I see that are absolutely heartbreaking are a married couple comes in, one spouse is in the nursing home, and they have spent, you know, $8,000 to $10,000 a month until there's absolutely nothing left. Mm. Then they come to see me and they say, okay, there's nothing left. Now we need to apply for Medicaid. And sure, I can help them, but if I had seen wow. them in the beginning, we could have protected all of it, because typically you have one spouse in a nursing home. You may have that person that's living at home still. They could live another 20 years.
Oh, sure.
And they need assets to be able to survive and not pay everything over to the nursing home. So that's...
Wow. And here again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard that paying back Medicaid... Because you have to pay them back, right? If you do have assets, isn't that kind of how that works? Or if the assets aren't protected?
Right. Well, so what you're referring to is estate recovery. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's something Michigan implemented fairly recently. But so what it says is if they pass away and assets go through probate,
okay,
which is probate court, you know, everyone tries to avoid. If your assets go through probate, then the state can file a lien on the probate estate to get paid back the funds they have spent out. So what we do now, typically if someone's on Medicaid, mm-hmm. you know, if it's a single person, they have $2,000 in assets and a house most of the time. And then if it's a married couple, we've moved everything to the spouse. So that person, again, has a house and 2,000 assets. So the house is always the big asset for the Medicaid recipient. We have to make sure that avoids probate. Now, you can't give it away, right? We can't put the kids on it and that type of thing. So that's where the ladybird deed comes in.
Okay.
Okay. So a ladybird deed is similar to a quitclaim deed. It's, you know, a piece of paper that we draft. But what it does is it says, if I still own this property upon my passing, this is who I want it to transfer to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so then it transfers to that person automatically, avoiding probate in the court process and then avoiding the state's lien as well.
Okay. And another side thing with the ladybird, and here again, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you quit claim deed a child onto your house, and let's say that kid gets into a car accident and is liable and sued, that house could be attached.
Absolutely.
Where the ladybird, that would not happen.
Absolutely. So I see this at least weekly in my office.
Wow.
That people come in, and it's similar to what you said at the very beginning, where dad put his child onto the house, right? So
mm-hmm.
there's and then it uncapped, right? So the ladybird deed is the better way, because upon the passing of the person, we get the step up in basis as well. So then they go to sell it. They don't owe any capital gains on it. And then also, it's not putting the child on there either, like you said, so
right.
protect from creditors as well. Okay.
So by doing the ladybird, the recipient would avoid the capital gains as long as they adhere to the living there 2 years in the last five, the predecessor?
Correct.
The deceased.
Correct.
Oh, really?
Yes, because they're inheriting it. So... I'm not sure why, but what attorneys used to do is the drawer deed. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm doing a quick claim deed. I'm going to put your kid on the...
Put it in the drawer.
Put it in the drawer, and there's this little sticky note on it that says, don't record until after mom and dad pass away.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to record that deed, the property is actually transferred to the child during their lifetime. So now you take mom or dad's basis in that property. Now, most of the time, that's not the child's principal residence.
Right.
So they go to sell it then. They own capital gains on the difference between what mom and dad purchased it for and what we sold it for.
Right.
And with my clients, a lot of times they've lived there for 60 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, trust me.
Yeah, so the Lady Bird deed, it is such a better way to do it. It takes care, it takes all that, you know, because they get step-up basis as the time of the passing, fair market value, no taxes, and then mom and dad can change it at any time they want to. If they don't, they want it to change who it goes to, mm-hmm. you know, because it doesn't actually pass to the child until after they pass away.
And that is a great way to keep control. I didn't know that about the capital gains, which is for a single person, that is tax-free up to $250,000. And
yes.
for a married couple, up to $500,000 tax-free, which, hey, come on now.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Absolutely.
So, and trying to go back and prove that, you know, mom and dad, they bought the house for $42,000 and now it's worth $250,000 and... Trying to say that, hey, they put $210,000 in and here's all the receipts. Good luck with that, right?
I know.
All right. Well, excellent. So another question we had. So I told you we had, you know, we put out on Facebook and tried to get some questions.
Yeah.
So I had, what if I own an asset jointly with my mom? Do they only take half? Was literally the question. So I'll let you determine that.
Great question. So... Sometimes, okay? If it's a bank account, no. Any bank account that has mom or dad's name on it, we're talking about whoever's in the nursing home,
mm-hmm.
they attribute that whole account to mom or dad because they could walk into the bank and withdraw 100%.
Sure.
Now, one kind of caveat is sometimes people come in and they have mom or dad on their account. The kids do, and it's the kids' money because let's say... They don't have any children.
Right.
So they put mom and dad on the account in case they pass away. While mom or dad goes into the nursing home, they're looking at that kid's account as well.
Oh, my goodness.
So as mom and dad age, we need to take them off of those accounts, of the children's accounts. Now, where they don't take all of the money is in accounts like... sometimes there's like stock accounts that require mm-hmm. two signatures.
Okay.
So if it requires two signatures... They only take half.
They just need to make it a little more simplistic, right?
Right.
This is a crazy maze. That's why definitely folks have to get in and talk with you early and get this stuff planned out. I never knew that about the parent being on the child's account.
Yeah.
You know, because I know a lot of people in that situation.
Yes. I see that a lot. And whenever they come in, I'm like, you got to get them off right now. And they're like, oh, my gosh, I didn't even realize.
Happy Mother's Day. By the way, would you mind signing here?
Right.
Cut you out. Wow. Well, so planning far enough in advance, and what would you say would be the optimal age for someone to come in and really set down? Because I think nationally speaking, and I read this somewhere, that less than 20% of people in the United States have a trust set up. And out of that 20%, less than 11% was an actually funded trust.
Yes, that's a big part of it that most people forget about.
Oh, yeah.
The funding.
We've ran into that where people, our house is in a trust. Our house is, it's not in a trust, guys.
Right. You have an empty trust.
You have an empty trust. So explain exactly what that means for folks.
Absolutely.
And when that optimal time to really start this process.
Sure. So creating your estate plan, typically you come into an attorney's office, you sit down, you tell them what your wishes are, who you want to be in charge, where does everything go, and then you come back and sign everything, okay? And then they put it together in a binder for you, and it's all beautifully tabbed, and you go away with your binder. Now, some attorneys are better than others in instructing on funding, because understand, in our office as an attorney, the only thing we can fund is real estate. because it's done with a deed, right? Mm-hmm. So we take care of that. But after that, it's on the client to go to the bank to meet with their financial advisor, deal with life insurance, 401ks. So once your trust is created, it's an empty bowl. You know, when you leave our office, you have a house in it if you own a house. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we actually have to do something on every single other asset. So if my bank accounts, you're taking your binder into the bank. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're changing titling on your account to the name of your trust. So no real difference once they get it originally set up. The bank statement will just say trust on it. That's going to be the only difference, right? But you got to hit every asset. If you have life insurance, we got to do a change of beneficiary form. We need to make sure IRA and 401k's beneficiaries are up to date, right? And then it's kind of ongoing. So if people purchase another house, they sell their house, they purchase another house, they come back in my office, we do another deed, putting it into the trust. So you have to make sure that every account, every asset you have is owned by your trust in some way. That's called funding.
Okay. So basically a trust is its own entity. It's like its own person.
You got it.
That you've developed. Now you got to give them all your stuff.
Exactly.
Because if not, he's just walking around with empty pockets.
Right. So for an example, let's say you never put your bank account in your trust and you want your son to be the trustee. If you pass away, you know, and he walks into the bank and it's not in the name of the trust, they're going to say, go to probate court. You have no authority over this account. But just putting the name trust on there, now when your son walks in, they say, absolutely, we see right here your successor trustee. And now he can transact on the account, take care of things.
And I think a lot of people are confused on a power of attorney. They don't realize that a power of attorney is only for a living person.
Yes.
And because we've had folks say, oh, no, I have a power of attorney.
Yes. Wow. Power of attorney cancels upon death. Right. So,
Period. Yes.
So that's why having the trust is better. But you still want a power of attorney for things like IRAs or 401ks, because those can't be owned by a trust because the IRS says so.
Okay.
Right? So we still need power of attorney for those type of things. Okay. It's sometimes clients get confused too with the binder. You leave with this binder with all these different documents,
right?
Your trust, your power of attorney, your patient advocate, your will. And they get confused where to pull out which document, right?
You know? Understandably.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when you have your account in the name of your trust, you're not pulling out your power of attorney to try to deal with that account.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of people that get frustrated about that, right? You got to use your trust document. So
a power of attorney for an IRA, how does that work after they pass? Is that power of attorney still?
No. So the power of attorney, it allows you while they're alive to, let's say, sign for required minimum distributions. Mm-hmm. It allows you to access the IRA account in case they need money, mom or dad need money, right? But upon the passing, it's going to then go down to the beneficiary designation.
Okay.
So you need to make sure when we do estate planning like wills and trusts, we're looking at those designations as well to make sure they're up to date. You know, make sure we don't have a deceased spouse on there or, you know, a child, or making sure they have their wishes are still what that was originally designated to.
And that's just very important stuff. I'm going to read another one real quick here.
Sure.
So you can't get a big head just because I'm reading all these. And trust me, I pull these kind of randomly.
Yeah.
You know, and all of your guys' reviews was awesome. So
thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Let's see. Aaron and the staff are wonderful. They help. Let's see. The help they gave me with my elderly parents was a lifesaver for me. I highly recommend this firm, which was very positive because here again, it's and we work with people all the time that just did not set anything up. And now it's an emergency crisis.
Sure.
And there's nothing worse than being the person in charge after your parents passed, have to unravel all this stuff.
Absolutely. And it's they found themselves in a place where they've not done this before and they've had the loss of a parent, you know, and trying to deal with this stuff, it's the last thing that people want to deal with then.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And they still at that point have to hire an attorney normally to help them with probate.
Yes.
So you can forego all that, do it up front.
Absolutely. It's a lot easier.
I got to tell you, one of your reviews I kind of cracked up because they spoke how highly of you and they have great parking. five-star review. Yes, yeah, I thought that was awesome, him to throw that parking in there. That is so great. So how much does nursing home cost right now for people?
You know, anywhere between probably about $8,500 up to $10,000 or $11,000 a month. That's the kind of the average in our area right now.
Okay. And boy, that would eat up some assets quickly.
Absolutely, very quickly.
All right. So what do you think the best time to start putting all of this together?
So I get that question a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We start doing, you know, everyone should have their estate plan kind of set up. I mean, even people with minor children,
sure.
you need to say who you want to be the guardian, who you want to be the conservator if something happens and your children are minors. So you never know when something like that'll happen. And as far as the elder law part of it, mm-hmm. you know, like the Medicaid pre-planning and things like that, you know, I have clients that have early onset dementia and they're very young, you know, but
right. But
we say typically when you see yourself or your spouse starting to have some health issues,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're starting to need more help from your kids, that's when a lot of times when we kind of put in a five-year plan for them, a pre-plan,
okay.
start talking about irrevocable trusts and that type of thing. I have a lot of people who are at retirement age and they're like, do we need an irrevocable trust yet? And I'm like, well, you know, if you can tell me, you know, if you're going to need a nursing home, I can tell you the answer, right? But a lot of times those people are a little bit too young in that they don't quite want to give up control to their kids yet.
Sure.
So, you know, because there is that control they have to give up. But so I'd say it's right about the time where they're starting to need a little bit more help. They're thinking about bringing help in or assisted mm-hmm. living, as long as we can have that 5 years before we need actual nursing home care.
And that 5 years look back
mm-hmm.
is paramount, then, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
So basically what you'd recommend is everyone setting up a base type trust.
Yes.
Getting those, so it's like step A, and then as you're progressing in age, and speaking about dementia, I mean, the increase in dementia has been dramatic in the last decade.
Absolutely.
And we are seeing it younger and younger and younger. We actually had a dementia specialist in here not too long ago, mm-hmm. and the stats on it is just incredible.
Yeah.
So here again, though, that five-year look back, and when something with dementia, I mean, 5 years might, you know, by the time you're noticing it, it could go quite quickly.
It can. It definitely can, you know. So it's the sooner the better, you know, but mm-hmm. there is that kind of at least having a conversation about it, you know,
sure.
about estate planning and have an estate plan review. Number one, you want to make sure you avoid probate. You know, it's not the end of the world, but if we can avoid it, and it's so easy to, but then, yeah, there's that, you got to find the perfect time for your family and when to start the nursing home planning part of it.
And let's talk a little bit about probate. There's actually two types of probate, correct?
Yeah.
So why don't you go over the types of probate, and then folks can understand that this is necessary to try to avoid, but it's not the end of the world either.
Right. No, it's not. It costs time and money, mm-hmm. basically. So, you know, there's probate when someone's alive even, right? So we have guardianships and conservatorships. So those are so easily avoided with a power of attorney and a patient advocate. And a lot of times I have people call me and say, all right, my mom can't make decisions anymore for herself. I need to be her patient advocate now. Well, at that point, it's too late. Because she can't sign.
Right.
Right? So she has to be mentally competent to be able to understand what she's signing. So power of attorney, patient advocate will avoid a guardianship or a conservatorship while that person is alive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those can get they're very emotional cases because a lot of times we have the siblings and, you know, all the kids that come in and they don't agree. And those can be really difficult situations. We try to avoid them at all costs, but sometimes they are necessary. Now, if someone passes away, you're looking at like a decedent's estate.
Okay.
So that means if there are assets that are just in that person's name, they have to go through probate. So three ways to avoid probate are joint ownership, beneficiary designation, or a trust. Okay. So there are some people that can get their estate planning done without a trust, mm-hmm. you know, just depending on what assets they have.
Right.
Right. So joint ownership, we never recommend that a child should be on mom or dad's account, right? Just because if there's something going on in their life, creditors, bankruptcy, divorce, you know, mom and dad's assets are then at risk.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
And like the case with my son, I'd hear, make it rain, baby. You know, so right. It kind of concerned me a little. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I have a lot of clients that say to me, oh, no, that'll never happen. My kids have been married for 25 years. They don't have any creditors. They have a great job. You know, I say, well, you know, in the society that we live in, what if they were to rear end somebody? And then get sued. You know,
sure.
Bad things happen to good people, right? So we only really recommend avoiding probate with joint ownership is between spouses, okay, a married couple, husband and wife. So if we're not using joint ownership, the other one's beneficiary designation,
mm-hmm.
okay? So IRAs, 401ks, life insurance, those you're able to put beneficiaries on typically, right? Unless you have a really elaborate distribution,
right?
Okay, that you want, you know, to be held in trust and these type of things. Bank accounts, you're more limited. Some banks let you put one name mm-hmm. on it. Some banks let you put more. So you just got to look into that. And then we have the Ladybird deed that can avoid probate as well. You know, so that's an option.
Sure.
You know, so it just kind of depends on their specific situation and their family dynamics as to, you know, who we whether we go with a trust or not, right?
Well, I'll tell you, the two times from we sell a house and we're in a closing, there's only two times normally in the 20 years, and gosh, I can't even tell you how many closings, that we've had to have separate closings.
Yeah.
One is in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is with multiple children.
Yeah.
And literally, it's not the buyer and seller. It's child one, child two. Got to keep them separate.
Absolutely.
And you hate to think that about your own family.
Yeah.
But I know you've seen it. I've seen it. Most people have seen it. Whenever this situation arises, there's just, I don't know if it's an emotional thing. Mom loved you more than me or yeah. this. Really, the claws can come out.
Yeah. It's, you know, we see it more often than not, actually. And I think a lot of times it's happens when mom and dad are starting to decline.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes one child is doing more for mom and dad than the others. And there's just a little bit of resentment there. And mm-hmm. that we see that actually a lot. Maybe they're upset that their siblings didn't help out as much as they thought they should. And, you know, so unfortunately, we do see things when parents pass away and money's involved. We do see a lot of arguments come up.
So the best Christmas gift, parents, you can do this year, get a trust, right?
Right?
Put it in place and then just put a card on for each of your kids. Merry Christmas. We did a trust. That's your gift.
There you go. Absolutely.
I mean, it's going to go much farther than the Cuisinart.
Absolutely.
So, and going back to probate too, if you are in probate, and here again, I just have an inkling of knowledge and it's contested on who's going to be the representative. It can get really strung out.
It can. And, you know, we always say the only one that wins in that situation is the attorneys.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter what side you're on when it's a family dispute like that. You're going to be spending so much money in attorney fees and really neither one of the sides are going to be happy at the end.
No. So not only does it cost them a ton of money and time, but just that damage to the relationship. I don't
Absolutely.
Even know if you can recoup from something like that.
Yeah. Most of the time I wouldn't think so from what I've seen.
Yeah. No, I've seen some ugly ones.
Yeah.
Where there, and I've had also where people, there is a trustee involved and that at that point is who I'm working for. And I've had the siblings call trying to get information.
Right.
And it's like, I'm sorry, I can't give you that information.
Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to have my attorney call you. Well, that's great, but my hands are tied here.
Right.
So even then when a trust was involved, we've had situations, mm-hmm. but the difference was it concluded much quicker.
Yes.
And they were able to, where the person that literally had to say, look, I'm in charge because they wanted me in charge.
Yeah, absolutely.
So definitely some things to do. Now going in back to Medicaid, and here again, I just have a little knowledge on it. They can actually, what happens to like your Social Security checks and such that are coming in?
Yeah, absolutely. So we calculate what's called a patient pay amount. Mm-hmm. So for a single person, they're going to look at all the income. They're going to keep $60 as a personal allowance for themselves. And then they get to pay any health insurance premiums off the top. And then the remainder of that will go as a patient pay to the nursing home. Okay. Now, with a married couple, the at-home spouse's income is never at risk. Okay.
Okay.
It's only the person in the nursing home. Now, there are certain allowances that the spouse can get. Mm-hmm. And if the spouse feels that the allowance is based on their specific facts, if it's not enough for them to pay their bills, we actually petition the probate court in that county, and we ask for an increase in the allowance. So a lot of the times our clients are, the spouse at home is keeping all of the income for a married couple.
Oh, from both?
Yes, from theirs and the nursing home spouse's income.
Okay, I didn't know that was a possibility. That can be a game changer in itself.
Absolutely.
Because here again, you have someone right at home.
Yeah.
That probably has needs that need to be met outside, even if it's not a full nursing home.
Sure. Yeah.
So now, when they need to apply for Medicaid, how does that process go? Like, at what point? You talked about the folks who waited till all their assets were totally eliminated.
Yeah.
And where is the proper time to come in on that?
As soon as possible, as soon as you know someone is going into a nursing home.
Okay.
You know, and we have a lot of people that come in because they can go into the nursing home, remember, for a short rehab stay. Mm-hmm. After they have to be in the hospital for 3 days, and then they can transfer to the nursing home. Medicare and supplemental insurance will pay up to 100 days.
Okay.
Okay. Now, most people don't get 100 days, though. It's if they feel that they're not improving, mm-hmm. okay, that they've kind of plateaued is what they call it, they will cut them off. So we have a lot of people that come in when they're in that stage, and we're kind of planning. We have a couple weeks here. We're going to see how rehab goes. Maybe they can go mm-hmm. home, maybe not. And if not, here's kind of our game plan. So okay. as soon as someone goes into nursing home, or actually, when they're in the hospital even, because where we direct people, when I talk to someone in the hospital, I direct them into a nursing home that they could potentially stay in if they needed long-term care.
Oh, that's a big difference there.
Yeah. So they don't have to move them.
Sure.
You know, some facilities are strictly short-term.
Right.
Not all of them, mm-hmm. not a lot of them, but some are where you'd really like to, if you're unsure that the person's going to be able to go home, you really want to go into a nursing home they can just stay at then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we would direct them while they're still at the hospital.
Okay. So basically, your loved one goes into the hospital. There's talks about long-term care.
Yes.
At that point, they need to be picking up the phone.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's really hard to go from home into a nursing home. So, you know, sometimes people are at the hospital and they're unsure. They haven't looked at what nursing home, and they're saying, okay, well, we're discharging tomorrow, and they're kind of mm-hmm. frantic, and they'll take mom or dad home. Now you just lost your window, you know, to get, because that's the window, getting them in while they're right. in the hospital. Because once you're at home, it's, they're looking sometimes for a very large security deposit going into the facility.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. So you really, I mean, I've had people that have said, okay, you know, we need to get mom into a nursing home. We can't care for her at home anymore. You know, the doctor said she's really dehydrated. We're going to send her to the hospital for the 3 days and then get her on some IVs, and then we're going to go to the nursing home. That's the easiest way
okay.
to get in the door there, especially, you know, it's most, I mean, I don't have any clients that want to go to the nursing home, right?
Of course.
So, you know, it's really hard to take mom and dad out of a house, put them in a car, and, you know, take them to a nursing home. So it's way easier from a hospital setting.
Well, I didn't know that. I mean, that's a huge difference. So if they're waiting, trying to be that diligent child taking care of mom and or dad
right.
in the house, and they wait to that certain point,
right.
boy, it could be really devastating.
It is. So like when I have clients that are, you know, mom was in the hospital and we're going to go into the nursing home, and she said, you know, we might take her home and try it for a couple weeks. And I say, you really want to think about that because
yeah.
it could be very difficult to then get in. You know, this may be the time where you should decide that, you know, rather than later.
And if down the road they come out of it, because I mean, we've had folks that went into hospice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Came out and oh, yeah. got better. And
yeah. Once you go in, I mean, it's not like you have to stay there. They can pull right. them out at any time. Yeah. Or transfer to another facility if they're unhappy there, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, is there anything when picking out a long-term care facility that, if, let's say it was your parent, what would you look for?
So what we always recommend to people is go visit a bunch of them. So I have, you know, my list that I give to clients, the ones that I'm familiar with. And
sure.
there's ones I would say don't go to, and there's ones I say, yeah, this is a good mm-hmm. facility. But everyone has a different reason why they like or dislike a facility.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, go look at a bunch of them. You know, some people want a fancier place. Other people don't care about that. You know,
right.
so there's different things. So I say, go and, but show up. Don't call. Don't schedule an appointment. Go and show up and just walk in and see what's going on and see how you feel about that facility then. So we'll give them, you know, five facilities, go check these ones out. These are some good ones that we,
right.
you know, in the area. And we kind of, we'll look at where they live because mm-hmm. we always say too is, you know, mom or dad are going to get the best care if you guys can stop in unannounced.
Hugely important.
Yeah,
huge.
At different times. You know, if
right.
they know that you stop in every day at 6:30, you know, you want to come at different times. You want to come and go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really where someone gets the most care, when they have people going in and constantly monitoring what's going on. So we want it close to home, too.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I can't stress how important that is. We used to volunteer cleaning up a few facilities that are actually gone now.
Okay.
And I remember with our Rotary group, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would show up in a few of these places. My goodness, you walked in and the smell of urine
yeah.
would just smack you. And they knew we were coming, but
right.
they were nonprofits that,
yeah.
like I said, they actually no longer exist. They've been bulldozed.
Yeah. You know what? A lot of people that come in my office think that every nursing home is like that too.
Right.
And they, I mean, there's some really beautiful facilities.
Oh, yes, there
by
is.
Us. I mean, you know, it's everyone thinks, and everyone thinks too that, oh, well, geez, Medicaid, like that means I'm going to be in the worst facility in this little corner room. And it's not. You know, I have clients in every single nursing home in Macomb County, except
mm-hmm.
I'm not as familiar with Oakland, but every single one in Macomb County accepts at least partial Medicaid, meaning they have
okay.
certain beds. Now, that being said, you could be in a facility on Medicaid, and in it is a semi-private room, so they're sharing a room.
Right.
The other person in the room could be on private pay at $10,000 a month. So it's not a different room. It's not you have it's smaller or you're getting different care. I mean, the nurses on the floor don't know the difference as to who's on Medicaid
sure.
and who's private pay. You know, so that's kind of a big misconception that is out there.
Well, that's across the entire elder living.
Yeah.
Whether it's independent living or.
Oh, yeah. Those yeah. are really beautiful.
Oh, my gosh. Right?
yeah.
Some of those.
Sign me up.
Oh, I'm telling you.
I love them.
Yeah. It's like, kids, I love you, but, you know, my goodness. And that is a big part of it because a lot of people do have that perspective of one flew over the cuckoo's nest
yeah.
or they're sitting there in the corner. But it is important. And some of those nicer places, you could be put on a waiting list.
Oh, yeah.
So if you got into one facility
yeah.
and there was another one you preferred.
Absolutely. It's seamless. Once we have Medicaid approved, it's seamless between the facilities. And you know what? Some of the nicer facilities in the county are 100% duly certified as Medicare and Medicaid. You know, so it is not the worst nursing homes out there for sure.
And that's huge. That's huge. There's been a lot of changes, but I love your tip on just visiting at various times.
Yes.
Because even if the facility is absolutely fantastic, I think a lot of adult children, in the back of their mind, they have this feeling of, I let my parents down.
Yeah.
I didn't take care of them.
Yeah.
You know, and this remorse.
Sure. I mean, sometimes, though, it's for their own safety. You know, it's.
Well, it's not only for the safety of the parent, but the safety of the caregiver.
Yeah. It is hard to be a caregiver, and I see a lot of spouses as caregivers. And, you know, it really takes a toll on them. If I have a mom and dad at home and one is caring for the other, sometimes the caregiver spouse passes away first.
That's nationally speaking, that's about 40% of the time, 40-50% of the time. It's really quite high because it's so stressful upon them.
Absolutely. So, you know, we like to say, okay, if we can, you know, get some type of care or nursing home facility, whether it be nursing home assisted or even in-home care coming in, you know, at least it gives that caregiver spouse a little bit of a break. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had someone in the other day who he was like, you know, my wife, she argues with me. She doesn't want to take the pills. She doesn't want to take a shower. I have to force her to do this stuff. And I said, you shouldn't have to do that. You should be spending your, you know, quality time with her.
Right.
Right. So hire someone else to come in and do that and then spend quality time with your wife so you don't have to be the one. And most likely, she'll probably listen to the other person better than she'll listen to him.
Do you know what's funny? Seriously, we'll go into houses and many times I'll have the adult children go, you know, because we'll sit down and do a little analysis with them and give them our advice. And we'll come out and the adult children will be like, we've been telling them that for years.
Right. Me too. Same thing.
Right. And it's like, but you're the kids.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how big you are.
Some people will warn me. They'll be like, okay, like my dad can be a little, you know, and he's a little grouchy and I don't know if he's going to do this. And I'm like, don't worry about it. I'm sure he's fine.
It'll be okay.
Exactly.
That is funny. I mean, I truly plan on being that way with my kids. I've already put it in that, you know, I've told my kids, I go, ever since I got the ARP card, you're nowhere close, but I am. But as soon as I got the ARP card, that gives me like, you know, legitimacy to act a little weird.
Right.
And I told them it's just going to get worse as we get older. So let's go back and see if we've gotten, I think we got a lot of these questions. Don't take a quick look here. So going back and just kind of recapping a little bit.
Sure.
So step one, how soon to come in and start this process?
So step one, you should have at least an estate plan review, right? Let's figure out if most people don't even know.
So as soon as you have a kid.
Yeah. Or as soon as, you know, you have to have it done before it's too late, right?
Right.
So everyone should have an estate plan or at least a plan.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that everyone should have to have a trust right now, but at least have a plan. Mm-hmm. At least have a review of where assets are and, you know, how they're allocated. Make sure it's what you want. If we always plan for right now, right? And we can always change it in the future. So that's step one. At least have a review of your stuff. Everyone should have a power of attorney and a patient advocate, period, right? So if you go in, even if you're going into the hospital for, you know, a routine type procedure, you know, if something happens and you can't make a decision in that moment, you need to designate someone to do that for you. So everyone should have that, you know. And then once we start needing some help, let's do like an elder law evaluation as far as how do we start thinking about nursing home planning.
Okay.
It's always best to just have a plan.
Now, do you ever recommend, you know, long-term care insurance?
You know,
I mean, it's costly.
Yeah, it's funny because all of my clients have health insurance. All of them have homeowners insurance, car insurance.
Right.
But most of them do not have long-term care insurance. I mean, very few of them do. You know, that's something that you'd have to talk to the advisor about. Most of my senior clients are typically too old to get long-term insurance or
kind of the optimal age is 60.
Yeah.
That's when if you're going to do it, to lock in for the lowest.
Yeah. You know, there's new insurance out there, and it might be in the form of a life insurance. I'm not a financial advisor, so I kind of leave that up to the experts. But there are plans where if you don't use it for long term, it goes to your kids as a beneficiary then, which I like. I mean, the old long-term care policies were use it or lose it, which I kind of had a hard time with that, but
Same here.
You know, at least if you know that it's going to go to your kids then if you don't use it, those are really great options.
Definitely things to look into.
Yeah.
And one of the things I don't think people realize on a trust, so I remember, here again, I'm quite a bit older than you. So I remember when I was a junior in high school, there was a girl who was a senior who was 18. Her dad died.
Mm-hmm.
All the assets went to her.
Yeah.
She bought a brand new Trans Am. And for about 18 months, it was a party.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
And then at the end of those 18 months, gone.
Yeah.
And here she is, a 19 and a half at that point, with nothing. And with a trust, you can set up those distributions.
Yes.
And put whatever, what's the craziest thing that someone's put in a trust?
Sure. So I had one time, so you always designate an age where you want the beneficiaries to receive the money. So we typically recommend at minimum 25.
Okay.
Okay. A lot of my clients choose, like how I have my estate plan for my kids, it's 25, 30, and 35. So if like the mm-hmm. girl you knew blew through the first third of the estate, at least they have
right.
some, you know, that is still there. But I had one client that put the age at 65.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So they wanted, but they wanted it to be a retirement.
Okay.
So, I mean, it kind of made sense. But, you know, that's the beauty of a trust. You can, it's so flexible. Like I have one person who says, okay, 7% per year. And then they're in hopes that, you know, they're not going to touch the principal. They're just going to live off kind of interest on the account and they can have it for a long time. But the key is to make sure, you know, you don't want it to go at 18. You know, it's mm-hmm. available because it's available for schooling, medical, and welfare prior
right.
to whatever age we pick. So we can pay college tuition. You know, if we give it to them at 18, how do we know they're going to pay college tuition with it?
She did not.
Exactly, right? So that's not usually a good idea. I always say err on the higher side, you know, because if your child needs money prior to that mm-hmm. age, your trustee has the discretion to give it to them. You know, but right. we want it to go through this other person for kind of some checks and balances there. Now, it's funny you said someone at 18, because that brings me to a power of attorney and a patient advocate mm-hmm. for your 18-year-old, right? Because once they turn
right.
18, you can't make those decisions anymore. And I see it a lot.
That's a great point.
Absolutely, when they're going off to school. So, child turns 18, graduates from high school, goes off to college.
Sure.
Sometimes mom and dad are paying for the college. Well, I want to know what the grades are. Guess what? You can't call the school and ask what the grades are, you know, unless you have a power of attorney. So we do a lot in, say, August, September time when kids are going off to college. Mom and dad bring them in and we do power of attorney and patient advocate for them. You know, what if your child was injured? You can't make medical decisions for them.
Right. That was my thought. As soon as you said that, I didn't really ever think about that.
Yeah.
But I have a 16-year-old, so that's coming up quick.
Absolutely. Mm. So you can make medical decisions until 18, but at 18, you know, if you don't have that patient advocate in place, you can't.
Wow. Now, that's even if they're on your insurance?
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's pretty spooky.
Something to think about, you know.
It really is.
Luckily, most of the time, nothing happens, right? And we kind of get through okay. But
yeah,
you need to plan.
But that's just not a good rationale or way to go through life,
because
the problem is, you know, when something does happen, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we've seen it. I've seen it so much. Even like the girl I was talking about in high school, you know, she was 18. So what was her dad? 35 maybe.
Right.
And, you know, he just passed. I remember it was sudden and it was nothing that he had done. It was just like he had a heart attack or something and died.
Right.
And here's her daughter that should have been set up quite nicely.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, yeah, you have to plan for the unexpected. And I think a lot of times people don't think they have enough assets.
Right.
To have to do anything. But there's more to it than just protecting your assets.
Yeah. And I think it's very true that a lot of people think they don't have enough assets. But when you actually sit down and add things up, you know, because your house, you got to add the house and the value of the house,
sure.
right? All the bank accounts, life insurance, right? When you actually mm-hmm. sit down and add it up, you want to make sure that if you do pass and it goes to your kids, they're not getting into bad things. You know, the person you're talking about just spent all the money.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, she didn't do drugs or she didn't,
right.
you know, get herself in trouble. Or, you know, to an 18-year-old too, you know, it seems assets seem like it's a lot more. So we can
right.
see them. Maybe she then doesn't go to college at 18 because she says, great, I have all this money. And then 6 years down the road, uh-oh, well, all the money's gone now and I haven't done anything for the last 6 years. Mm-hmm. So then she's kind of starting over. You want to make sure you don't put your child in a position where they're not going to pursue college or a job or something to better themselves.
Sure.
You know?
Or even if they're married to someone who you don't think the longevity's there.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can help protect against.
Absolutely. That's a big consideration for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, we are almost done with our hour. So tell us, as you check your watch, I'm not fibbing to you. It's true. It's true.
I just want to make sure I'm not talking too much here.
No. So what's the best way for someone to reach out and get a hold of you?
Sure. So we offer a free consultation. We have two offices. One is at 16 in Garfield, and the other one we have is at Dearborn. So we have our office number that someone could just call, set up an appointment, come in for a free consultation. We kind of do an evaluation of their estate and then tell them what we would recommend basically at that point.
Okay. So step one, call 586-239. I'll say your number for you.
Okay.
0871. Or you can find him at ssrlawoffice.com and get a free consultation. And if you come in and, you know, worst case scenario, you get some good advice. It doesn't cost you anything. And they probably have good coffee there. I don't know.
We do.
You
we
do. Do. So Aaron's going to treat you to a cup of coffee. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for bringing your expertise and your time. And I would highly suggest people go on. You can Google them. Read the reviews. So many times people say, you know, I have a friend who's an attorney, blah, blah, blah. They'll take care of it. This is a specialty, guys. You want a specialist, and these folks are specialists. I cannot speak highly enough of them, but look at their reviews. This is too important. Someone might have the best intentions, but just like I'm sure the folks that we talked about earlier with the quick claim deed, but the problem is, as we get older, we cannot recoup as quickly. Once again, thank you, Aaron.
Thank you so much for having me.
No worries. We'll talk again.
Sounds good.